And then we can also roll into, we wanted to kind of come back around to ego mind and not completely wanting to eliminate
it. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a lot of good stuff. Actually, yes. I've had some experiences over the last couple of days that would play nicely into that. But first, what tools are you okay sharing for free with the change model?
Are we like, is this the start of the show?
Oh, we haven't even done the intro.
And I don't want to say what tools well, are you giving away for free.
Hot damn. Well, the whole podcast is free. Okay, let's start there. Let's start at the beginning.
Let's start the show.
Welcome to the True North Podcast, everyone. We're two practicing light workers get together every week to continue an ongoing conversation about wholeness and healing for body and mind so that you can follow your true north back to your true self. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Abby.
Okay, so here's what's happened. I'm just going to just insert this really quickly.
Lay it out.
Our toddler has been sick. Mm. We did his third birthday party, and we rented out the entire facility so that like we'd be the only people there and took all the precautions. But it was a pool party. It was an indoor pool party. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know this. That like I had a friend whose mom would never let her go swimming at the YMCA because she always came back sick. Mm. I'd never heard of someone like going to a public swimming place and then coming back sick. And of course, you think about that for 2 seconds and it makes sense. I just never thought about it. And so we do the thing. And then like that night, he's got this really croupy cough and he's really sick and everything. I'm like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. I hope the other kids didn't get sick too. But then it lasted like for a couple of days. The whole thing, the fever, all the stuff, mm-hmm. you know. So we ended up taking a couple of days off of work and school and stuff to stay home with them. And I remember thinking, I don't know how stay-at-home parents do it. Because, mm-hmm. like, after 4 days straight home with the kid, I was like, okay, go someone else take care of him for a day. I sound like a really good dad right now. But it was just exhausting because we just don't have that kind of rhythm set up in our home life. And then on top of that, our internet went out because I called our ISP and apparently there was like a car wreck, like an automobile accident where some vehicles hit some kind of equipment that just knocked out all the internet for our block.
Oh, dear.
And
your life right now depends on the internet with your school. And,
yes, a toddler home who's not used to being home and is used to being stimulated and organized, regimented. And I was like, oh, we don't have internet. So we survived. Mm-hmm. And so now that's why I'm going into recording a podcast, completely forgetting the intro, because what is life anymore? Even I'm not even close to recovered. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's me over explaining myself.
Well, welcome. I'll accept you however you are. Tired.
Thank you.
Stretch thin. Internetless. Let's do it.
Internetless. God, I feel so first world problems right now, but here we are. So.
Well, okay, so This is a side note, but it's really interesting how much our world has shifted, though, to relying on the internet, and especially more so like in quarantine. But when I go work at my other job, which is for our manufacturing business, it's like when our internet rolls out all the time over on that side of the town. I don't know why, but it's like we all sit around. We can't do a single thing. Machines pretty much anymore are all programmed, you know, through the internet. All of our customers work, everything. It's all via internet. It's interesting. What did we do before it?
I mean, right. And it's just a tool like anything else. Like once you know, factories happened, it's like, well, what would life look like without our factories? You know, mm-hmm. and like every time there's like a technological innovation, we jump straight to dependency.
Right.
Which I don't know if it's a bad thing, but it just is a thing. And then when it goes away, it's like all the things that we built upon the foundation of having that in place just kind of don't mm-hmm. have anything to stand on anymore.
Yeah, it does require a little bit of creativity, especially with a kiddo.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But, I mean, I learned a lot. Oh, and then there was some, like, relational things that happened that just gave, like, a good dose of emotional weight on top of everything mm-hmm. else that just, like, going back to what we were going to say, like, about the ego, just I was doing a lot of inner work. Mm-hmm. With stuff that had nothing to do with sick kid, had nothing to do with now I'm behind on work, had nothing to do with this new job that I got and I'm trying to get started and it's a work online because the company's Australia and there goes my internet. Like other things that had nothing to do with any of that were also just like emotionally sitting on top mm-hmm. of me in the midst of all of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot at once, which is fine because it's all starting to sort itself out. But man, being in the middle of it was It was quite the crucible.
Well, do you want to jump in there? If we're kind of on ego mind, we did say we were going to circle back to that.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You can say no.
Well, I just, for some reason, I know that I have a podcast and that we talk about real life. And then I just brought it up like it was nothing without actually preparing to talk about, like, how do I frame this? So, okay. So really, there are two relationships in my life that right about at the same time. And I'm going to say a lot of words that are very familiar within the course of this ongoing conversation that we've been having for a while. But I got feedback from both of these that I was participating in / contributing to some experiences for them that were not their favorite. And
what
I count it growth how I... Sorry,
what
go ahead.
Does that, like, define that? It was not their favorite. Like, in some way, you upset them? Like, or something you're doing is bothering them? Is that what you mean by that? I'm just wanting to be on the same page with you.
I'm gonna say that they were experiencing some type of emotional upset / pain.
Okay.
As a result of interactions that they've been having with me and I've been having.
Got
with
it.
Them.
Okay.
So a little bit more than disgruntled or uncomfortable, but not so, like, you know, we're gonna start a fight now because I'm super mad. You know, it was just kind of like, you know, just pain, mm-hmm. just hurt. And, you know, sometimes maybe even like in the middle of a conversation, wondering why they're still having a conversation with me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and in each of these relationships, I got that feedback and it came, you know, in the way that I would expect it to from each of these people. But I didn't do what I normally do in those situations. And what I normally do is just kind of like fall on my sword and be like, yep, you're right. I screwed up. I messed everything up. I'm sorry. It's all my fault. I'll never do it again. How do I fix it? How do I be better? Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Right. And that just comes from me, my peacemaker tendencies, my people pleasing tendencies, my aversion to feeling like somebody, oh no, it doesn't like me. And all those things that are like buried way, 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 way deep in there. And my first desire is always to try to smooth it over and get back to where things are good and happy. And I didn't do that. But then the next option, door number two, when I don't do that, is usually to like jump straight into self-loathing and just decide that I'm a miserable piece of shit and don't deserve friends and I'm ruining everything I touch, blah, 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 blah,
so
blah.
So you're believing the stories?
And I didn't... okay. Yeah, and I didn't do that either. Okay. I didn't do either of those. I didn't believe it, I didn't not believe it. And or I also didn't get defensive and say, no, that's your own problem. Your own pain is your problem, and I'm just going to do my thing. And you know, and I didn't like do the whole avoiding ownership mm-hmm. part either. And I've lived a good part of my life thinking that those were the only options, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was able to actually do, and I kind of like slipped into this naturally, which is why I was going to say I counted as growth, that like I'm now at a point where this is like my first response, is to take the feedback, wrap it within the context of this is their experience, and then wrap that within a larger context of this is our experience, and kind of just instantly go into perspective mode and say, what in this can I actually own? What in it is not mine to own? And then how do I, is there something to rebuild, and how do I rebuild that? And just kind of went that direction with it. I assessed.
Mm-hmm.
I assessed. Is their picture of me accurate, or is it not? Are parts of it accurate, or are they, like, how much of this is them making stuff up, and how much of it is me just not realizing that I was being a dick, you know? Because I'm always open to the fact that I have blind spots. But now I'm at a point where I'm not just going to readily accept when somebody points them out, that, oh, yep, this is a blind spot. You're right. Didn't see that I was hurting somebody. I'm going to stop now. Because sometimes I just wasn't.
Sometimes that may not be true.
Yeah, right. And so there's not a blanket acceptance or a blanket rejection. There's a blanket evaluation.
Okay, you're getting curious.
And and so in one of these situations, I spent an entire waking day just being really unkind to myself.
Mm.
Because it was kind of... like, it wasn't just a person making up stories. It was just how I was showing up and didn't realize how I was showing up. And some of that's down to, like, most of our interactions happen over text, and it's really hard to read into a bunch of stuff over text, so it's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's unavoidable given the medium. But other time, but there were other ways that, like, there were ways that I was coming across, I didn't realize I was coming across, and then I just kept coming across that way. But then in the other person who gave me similar feedback, when I assessed that, it didn't really have the same effect, because most of it I realized was them looking at small chunks of information and not the whole, and drawing a conclusion from that and telling themselves a story from that and getting wrapped up in their own hurt. And there's all kinds of other information within the context of our relationship that if they incorporated that into it, they would draw different conclusions. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even feel the need to do that. Normally I'll feel the need to do that. I'll feel the need to, like, say, oh, here's all the stuff you're not looking at. Here's the whole picture. Here's all the reasons you should stop being mad at me. But I didn't feel the need to. I was like, it's all there. You can look at it if you want. And if you don't, then that gives me information about where you're mm-hmm. at. And so in the one where I was beating myself up all day, maybe 12 hours after I got the feedback, we were back at it, talking, sorting it out. I was owning my shit. And we kind of built a new paradigm for our friendship that I think works better than it was before in the first place, you know, and we kind of needed to go through this little tiny rupture to go through the process of repair, because this repair kind of, neither one of us realized it was actually repairing things that go way further mm-hmm. back, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a good thing. I mean, it was good. It was all productive, and we're great. The other person's just, I'm giving them space. Mm-hmm. you know, it hasn't gotten resolved. I don't know that if it's going to or if it needs to. And I had my own pain around that, feeling a little bit dispensable.
Hmm.
That's never a good feeling.
No.
But then I also was able to take another step back. I keep taking more and more steps back to realize there's a big difference between burning a bridge and putting up a wall. And this is just a wall. And it's just self-preservation, as I understand it to be. And so, you know, I think my best option there is just to let them be for a while. And so I guess all I'm really saying is my ego, throughout both of these stories, as they unfolded, my ego kept trying to take the wheel.
Hmm.
Kept trying to convince me to be afraid of something. Kept trying to convince me to be angry about something. Kept trying to convince me to defend myself or to change their perspective or to scramble to return back to a place where the relationship wasn't uncomfortable. And I sensed every single time it tried to grab the wheel, every single time it tried to put me on one of those paths. And every single time I was able to, like, say no. Like, that's not how we're going to play this game. I know that's how you want to, and I understand that you're trying to protect me and that this is a thing that you believed protect me in the past and maybe did. But now I need to sit with this. Now I need to give them space. Now I need to listen. Now I need to evaluate. Now I need to own. Now I need to let go, you know? Mm-hmm. And every single time the ego came in and said, do this, do this, do this, I had an alternative. It wasn't just a no. It was like, instead, we're going to do this. And then I just did those things. And I'm not going to say that there's not pain.
Sure.
But on the other side of that coin, I do feel good about where I'm at in both of these
mm-hmm.
situations and how I'm showing up and how I'm playing the cards that were dealt to me.
Which that's ultimately what it is what I hear you saying, is that you're essentially just sitting in your own business. You know, there's still the their business where one of them has been repaired and one of them is yet to be determined, and you're choosing to not be in that business and try to fix that or control it. And just choosing to stay in your own and show up the best way you know possible.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the first relationship, because you made a really interesting point. It's been in the first relationship where you stood on it for 12 hours, and then there was, you had the rupture, you sat on it for 12 hours, whatever, all day. And then you had the repair. I want to talk about that that 12 hours, that time period of when you were kind of stepped away from it and you were going through that process of curiosity and really trying to define what was yours to own, what wasn't, coming to terms with some things. Do you feel that that was wasted time, or are you glad that you had that? And I'm asking for a specific reason. I'm curious though.
So I'm glad that I had that. It was not fun to go through. And I did a little bit of reading on this, and there's a phenomenon called rejection sensitive dysphoria. And the name kind of explains what that is. And it's not exclusive to ADHD, but it is exacerbated by a lot of people who have it. And so I didn't feel like this person was rejecting me, but I sure as hell rejected myself in response to their feedback. And then I responded to my own self-rejection the same way. And so that just got my nervous system. I went straight into the dumps. Like, chemically, I went into the dumps. I felt like I physically did not have access to serotonin, you know? And so that was like the baseline. Anything that I did was going to be built on that foundation of just being a way lower, just because of that one neurochemical property. But going to that space instead of, and not trying to climb out of it. Like, I was like, I got to go on a run. I got to go take my kid to feed some ducks. I got to go do this to get out of it and to get my, you know, my energy back up and my optimism. In this moment, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But in this moment, I felt like that would have just been me avoiding something that was uncomfortable.
Sure.
And so I just sat in it. I was like, I'll give myself a day. Sure. I can sit with these feelings and see if anything comes of them. And one of the things that I realized as I dug into, I kept on asking, like, why? Why is this so hard for me? This is not just a normal, oh, I broke it and I'm mad at myself. Like, it was getting deeper the longer it went. And I realized that I had made up a story that I was I don't know how to put this. A really, 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 really positive, life-giving, and uplifting presence in this person's life. Probably made up a story that I was more of that than anyone else in this person's life. And then when I got this feedback, this is not the feedback you would give to a person who is that wonderful of a presence in your circle. You know? Right. And so it kind of knocked down my idea of where I stand in their ethos. Mm-hmm. And I think that's positive because I feel like maybe my self-image in that arena needed to get knocked down a little bit. A little bit more healthy perspective on who I am to them.
There's that ego balance again.
Yeah. Like it's just, yeah. And so there's pain there, but it's not a bad pain. It's just, that's how the ego responds to that type of journey, you know? But it was one that I needed to take. And then I realized that, like, I just had a bunch of realizations about myself and about the nature of our friendship and what does and doesn't fit within those parameters. And those are all realizations I needed to have. But I kind of feel like I'm wired to need to go down into the dumps to find them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I was able to take those and bring them to this person and say, hey, here's some stuff. Let's talk about it. And they were open and met me where I was at. And we engaged with all the little nuggets I found in the muck that whole day. And like I said, we kind of rebuilt a new paradigm for how we're going to relate to each other that I think works a lot better than what we've been doing for a while, if I'm being honest with myself. There's still pain because it's still a change.
Right, right.
But, you know, I think all of that was needed to get where we are. And I think where we are is a good place.
But that sounds like that's a really healthy relationship. You know, the fact that the other person could meet you where you were in that moment and be willing and open to have kind of those hard conversations. I think that's what it means to meet somebody with love and light. And to kind of have that give and take in a relationship. And the reason why I was kind of asking you what you felt about that day of kind of sitting with it is I think that sometimes that piece is often overlooked because you know, something happens to us, we don't feel good about it. It hurts. We may have to own something we don't really want to own. Whatever the case may be per the situation, but we want that to just sort of be gone right away, you know. And like you mm-hmm. touched on it briefly with the rejection piece, is we don't want to feel unloved and, you know, pushed out of the circle, pushed out of the herd. But I think, like, what I've learned and what I've experienced, like what I've learned from myself and what I've experienced with my clients, is giving yourself that time to go through that process. And that time is going to be different for everybody. It might be 20 minutes. It might be an entire day, but just allowing yourself that time to go through it. But I think, and this is where I don't know the piece to your story, but letting the other person know that you want to circle back, and that really what you're doing is you're just going through your own time of processing this, and that you're wanting to show up as the best version of yourself. And so being able to say, hey, I want to be able to talk to you about this. Can we circle back when we're both ready to have this conversation? And to me, that's ultimately, you know, the best example of how to repair something. And it's not that it has to be repaired in that moment. I think we can be a lot more honest with ourselves. I think it's a lot more honoring to ourselves and the other person if we give ourselves that space that we need to kind of filter through all of it, so that we just mm-hmm. don't become reactive. And so it sounds like that's what you did. And even though, like you said, it wasn't a quick fix and it didn't feel good necessarily, it still feels like it took you to a new level in your relationship that you wouldn't have had maybe had you just reacted and tried to repair it too quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to the other relationship that ruptured at the same time, was like, we're in a place where they need a break from me. Which is fine. I know how I am, and people need breaks sometimes. I'm a lot, and and so for me, there's an interesting balance between honoring that boundary that was very clearly set, and also making up a story in my mind that if I don't initiate, it's just never gonna. This person's not ever just gonna reach back out, and that may not be true. That's a story I make up, but that's a fear, and that drives me to want to like say something, right? Mm. But then where I'm at with that one is like you said, it's repairing too quickly can nullify the entire experience that could be a rich springboard for the evolution of the relationship, mm-hmm. right? And so if I'm coming at it with, hey, we need to talk because I'm uncomfortable. I don't like that I think about texting you a few times a day, and I don't because I don't want to just piss you off or whatever. And now it's hard for me. It's hard for me. It's hurting me. I want to feel better about this. I want to be more comfortable. I'm uncomfortable with this. I don't want to, you know, like me. If I come at it with like, hey, let's repair this because I have relational desires. Mm-hmm. Well, then I'm completely sidestepping the whole reason that this person took a step back in the first place, you know? And so I need to deal with that with myself. And figure out why it's bothering me, why I want to reconnect, why I want to reprepare, why I want to repair, mm-hmm. and what's motivating me reaching back out. And if it's any of those things, then that just means I have more work to do with me. And this is a golden opportunity to do it because it's at a distance anyway, mm-hmm. you know? And until I can reach a point where it would be to truly repair a relationship instead of just make myself feel comfortable with the relationship, which means owning some stuff, having a conversation, being open to listen some more, them being open to hear some things that I might have to say or some questions I might need to ask, you know? And if I do that too soon, if they're not ready, then it's not even going to matter, you know? Mm-hmm. So on one sense, I can play the victim card and say that I'm being punished and being silenced and being ignored and shoved out and all this stuff and all the pain I'm experiencing, which is valid. It's pain, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't help me, and that doesn't help them, and it doesn't help us.
Right. And you can't.
And if I were to sit and stew in that,
you can't control when they're ready.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so what I can do is I can use this time. I have an amount of time in my head that I think is a a solid amount of time to a solid amount of space to give. And maybe I'm off. I won't know until I get there. And then I'll reach out. And I also think that that's just about as long as it's going to take for me to make sure my intentions are not ego-driven and not rooted in my own needs to feel a certain way about the status of our friendship. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see where it goes. And maybe I'll reach out and nothing will happen, or maybe they'll be ready too. But that's all stuff that's out there. It's not here, you know, right here in the middle of it is the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm focused on.
Okay. I like it. I don't, there's a place that, of course, my little red flags in my mind go up, and I'm not going to go down that road, but I do challenge you to think about whose measuring stick you're talking about when you say that you're a bit much sometimes.
Oh, shit. I could, we're not on Zoom, but I could still see your face when I said that. You were like,
I did. I know.
It was very specific, like,
I didn't like that answer.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. It is something to engage with. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that, like, this other person has also received that feedback sometimes. I think this person and I are very much alike.
Okay.
And it is the ways that we are very much alike that tend to be the problem areas in the way we relate to each other. So there is some element of, you know, some of that stuff as well. Us mirroring each other, and there's some self-acceptance that I think needs to happen there before we can really, like, you know, sync up on those levels. But yeah, you're mm-hmm. right. I mean, I should investigate why it's so easy for me to just say, oh, I'm a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you said that you chew loud and that bothers other people. Is it chew loud? What is it that you do? You eat?
Chewing loudly.
Yeah. I'm like, why? Who says that?
I know a lot of people who are bothered by the sound of loud chewing.
Oh.
There's like a name for it and everything. I can't look it up because I don't have internet. I'm going to bring that up every single time that my locks of internet touches this podcast. I don't have internet. But there's a name for it. It's... Yeah, it's maybe I should.
I know.
Just turn off
the internet. Let's just talk an ongoing conversation.
We should.
Where
Ryan's not looking at his screen the whole time.
So
yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's like, am I too much, or do they just not like how much I am? That's a good.
Well, because that could also very much just be a projection about themselves, right? Maybe there's something in them that they feel is too much. And it's easier, it's always easier to, like, scapegoat something other than admit how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah.
But there was something else I wanted to say. Like, this is a really hard position to be in. And I just want to point out that I not only hear your hurt, but I feel your hurt. And kind of sitting in that place of just not knowing where you are with that friend, and the repair hasn't happened yet, it's really easy to spin out. And I know you're not the only one, you know, that has experienced this before. And so I just want to point out, like, just coming back to, okay, what can you control? Obviously, you can't control when the repair is going to happen. You can't control how the friendship is going to work out, not work out, how the other person's going to feel, what they're going to say. So, and by sitting in that, it goes back to that painful electric shock. It's like, you're sitting in this space of not knowing whether or not you're going to get the shock. And it's producing some yuckiness that I can feel even all the way over here on my side of town. And so I do just want to encourage you, like, what can you control? What can you focus on? And it sounds like that's what you're doing, is kind of, and that's what it means to sit in your business, is just keep coming back to what you can control, because that's the only way that you can show up.
Yeah, that's, yeah. And it's, you know, what's weird is it's still uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like there's still pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly difficult to hurt my feelings. You know this. People who know me know mm-hmm. this. Everybody can be just, like, straight up and blunt, and doesn't even matter if I'm not going to like it. People in my life who know me really well just say it anyway, because it's really hard to hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this morning, this person's hurting my feelings.
Interesting.
And then my second thought was, are they hurting my feelings? Are they hurting my feelings? Or am I? What is the thing that's hurting my feelings? Is it the story I'm telling myself?
Mm.
And just being able to sit there and do that work has really helped me just kind of let them off the hook a little bit. Whereas before I saw it as they were hurt by me, so then they decided to start hurting me or doing a thing that was hurting me. When now it's just they experienced pain. And that pain was at least sparked by how we related to each other. And they're responding the way that their body and mind and history and nervous system know how to protect themselves from that kind of pain.
Mm-hmm.
I can neither blame nor fault them for any of that. And whether or not I caused it, it's still there. And they're still a friend of mine, and I still care. And so me continuing to release things that are not mine and to investigate where the things are coming from, where in me my feelings are coming from, give me all the space in the world to just have nothing left for this person but compassion.
Mm. That's a good place to land.
And that's a place I need to be before I reopen a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know? And so it's just, I'd like to live there for a little while. Before reaching out. And but I'm grateful that I have the tools to get myself to that place. I'm grateful that I have those voices in my head that ask me those questions. Mm-hmm. And get me to really dig down and sift through it all and what's mine and what's not. And I think I'm less than a year into actually being in the habit of having those dialogues with myself.
It still takes practice. But man, you make a really good point. It's still very hard. It doesn't make it easier to shift to what you can control. There's still hurt and pain. There's still unknown territory if you're new to this process. But it's a matter of just keeping going. Keep going.
Yeah, and the next thing that I'm working on is detaching from an outcome.
If you find the solution to that problem, please let me know. I'm also working on that.
It's hard to fucking do. It's hard to do because then you tell yourself, I'm going to talk to them and I'm going to be in a good place and then it's all going to be, you know, it's all going to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't know where they are because we're not talking.
Right.
How am I supposed to know? You know, and then when we get into the conversation, what is my goal? Is my goal to, like, I'm not going to end this conversation until I make you laugh and we talk about how much we love each other again. No, because that's a holding space for them to have their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's hard. It's really hard. I almost don't even know how to process how I would have a conversation if not attached to some type of outcome.
What's funny is, you know, we're talking about uncertainty and how it makes us feel. And that's exactly what that is. It's like not attaching an outcome is just going in completely uncertain of how it's going to turn out. And nobody, we don't want that. That's not the way our minds operate. And so it is so easy to attach an outcome because it's our way of controlling something. It's like we feel we can control the outcome. And so, you know, if we just do X, Y, Z, then yes, by the end of the conversation, we can be laughing and talking about how much we love each other again. But that's funny because that's you're only 50%. So isn't that's what's really funny about the ego mind is like you're only 50% of that relationship. Yes. The other 50%
right.
has to get on board.
Yes, and the sentence is not done making itself. Hold on, I just had a glitch. I'm watching it like Legos putting themselves together. Okay, that is the thing about ego that I think is so slippery, is that we tend to have an all or nothing attitude towards it, where all ego says, I can control this so much that I can start a conversation with you, decide where I want it to land, and make it land there. Because I'm just so compelling and convincing and persuasive and relentless.
Isn't it funny and when you say that out loud? Oh my God.
It feels like truth, man.
Yeah, you're like, that's really what's happening in our heads. And then you say it out loud, yes, and you're like, that sounds horrible.
I sound like a sociopath, but how many times do you go into like reparative conversations with that attitude? You know, like you put on your salesman hat, I will make you like me, you know? And And then if we say, we just say, oh, just surrender. Well, then we go to the nothing where it's like, oh, nothing's in my control. I may as well not even have a conversation in the first place because I don't know where it's going to land. It could be worse. It's not worth the risk. Don't do it. And then we never talk again. Right. And so there's this like 50-50 thing, which is like, not all ego, not no ego. It's just like an appropriate amount of ego. Your ego is the thing that thrives on control, and you controlling yourself is a crucial part of this whole thing. But you can't control the conversation if it involves anyone else that's not you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so now it's like, what would a conversation look like if I went into it and initiated it without being attached to an outcome for that conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would just be connection and curiosity. Where are you? How are you? What has this been like for you? I want to know because I care. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There is no ulterior motive. There is no agenda. There's nothing that if it did or didn't happen, I would walk away from the conversation disappointed or thinking that it was pointless or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and by asking all those questions, you're filling in the blanks with information that you didn't have before. The information you were just probably making up in your head.
Right.
So asking questions is, you know, asking how are you, where are you? You are getting the information that your ego is trying to fill in the blanks.
Fill in for you.
Which isn't working.
Right. And so then, weirdly enough, the way to silence the ego is to satisfy the ego.
Mm-hmm.
The ego's insatiable need to fill in all the blanks. You just can't let the ego fill in the blanks that you can't fill in.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's where the fear comes from.
Well, it's like you do have to have this 50-50 relationship with yourself. 50% ego, because you do have to have that confidence there. You have to know that you're able to repair, that you're able to go in to do this. But then the other 50% is that soul mind just showing up with, there's information I don't know. And I'm not going to spin out just telling myself stories based on my own experiences in the past when I really don't know what's going on with this other person. So within your 50-50 relationship with a person, you still have a 50-50 relationship with yourself. Need them both. We can't just completely excuse the ego at all. I don't think that we would get anywhere if we didn't have the ego kind of driving us sometimes. We just can't let it take control, full control.
Right. Yeah. And that's so interesting how I'm drawing a correlation between there are people I know who are not in control of themselves, and they also happen to be people who really try to exert control over other people. Mm. And then you have the alternative to that, which is like, you know, the yogis in the mountains who just live the monastic life of solitude, who are in complete control of themselves and have released all attempts to try to control anything else. And then you and I have even talked about how maybe there's a limit to how much relational capacity you even have when you give so few fucks about anything else,
right?
About where anything, you know? And so it's like you control yourself to a point, and that point is precisely the amount of room you leave for other things to be controlled by other things.
Mm.
And that feels like a good place to be, because then you're honoring the fact, because we've talked before about how your body really only does and incorporates things that it believes serve you. I think you and I both agree that that's like a baseline underlying fundamental truth. So if we somehow evolve the ability to have an ego, then in some way I have to believe that it serves us.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, I think, a beautiful way to incorporate all the things that the ego does for us, while also kind of like neutering all the ways that it could go overboard. The second it goes overboard, it starts hurting us and other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy because the ego is hungry.
Right.
You know? And so keeping it tamed and keeping it where it belongs and keeping it in check, I guess in check is a better word. Yeah, that's the practice. That's the daily practice. But when you can find that place, man, it just somehow becomes easier to sit in the discomfort of knowing that someone else out there is telling themselves a story about you and it's driving them to disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you really, really love that connection.
Right.
It teaches you how to be okay with it. And in addition to that, just let it hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of an oxymoron that you actually have to
feed your ego to keep it in control. Right? You know, like,
yeah,
it just seems like the opposite is not ignoring it, not giving it attention. Because if you do that, then it's just going to explode and take over. But you actually do have to give it a little bit of time and attention. You do have to feed it a little bit so that it stays within control.
Yeah, I remember like I think one of the earliest times we talked about ego mind, soul mind was with the old parable of the two wolves that are battling and mm-hmm. the kid says which one wins and the mentor says whichever one you feed.
Yep.
I think there's a little bit, like we've evolved a little bit from that paradigm because that implies you can only feed one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you think about those animals, if they're hungry, that's when they go on the attack. That's when they start, you know, getting really aggressive and vicious and food aggressive and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And then when they're fed and they're content, they don't really have a need to do any of that, mm-hmm. you know? And so just feed both of them. You feed one and the other one's just going to get worse, yep. you know? Uh-huh. So just feed all the wolves. Feed all the wolves. They're all in there. They all have value. They're all your little pet selves. Feed your lizard is what's going to go on our
lizard.
T-shirts. Feed the lizard.
Yes, but that's...
It is very counterintuitive. It kind of runs counter to a lot of the things that we've said before.
Well, I know, and that's why it just... I'm glad we're kind of coming back full circle to this because I feel like I've never said we shouldn't have a lizard. What I say most of the time is
right.
Don't pay attention to your lizard. Don't listen to it. And the fact that don't let it drive 100%. Like it, you both need right. to be
flick
co-pilots.
Your lizard. And...
Yeah.
Yes.
And so coming back to this, yeah, it's like you do have to feed your lizard to a certain degree. We just don't have to let it be in charge. We don't want it to be in charge.
Yeah. And we think about this, like, you feed your lizard, or your lizard is going to go try to get other people to feed it.
Yes.
That's when you get codependent. That's when you get needy. Mm-hmm. That's when you approach your relationships through a lens of, what can I get out of this? And am I happy with this relationship? That question being answered based on what I'm getting out of it. All that stuff is a hungry ego, because you ain't feeding it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in an interesting way, like a turn of events, all this like self-love and self-nurturing and reparenting, this is a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, you're feeding and nurturing yourself. Your ego is a part of yourself. So your ego gets a seat at the table, which means it gets a plate with some stuff. It's one of the things you're feeding when you feed yourself. You know, mm-hmm. So this all kind of weirdly is starting to click into place and make a lot of sense.
So this is, I want to point this out too. This is a good time to say this. And I, how do I say this without, I don't want to hurt your feelings by saying this.
It's very difficult to hurt my feelings.
Like when you get caught up in wanting to repair this relationship, because this relationship means a lot to you, when you're only focused on your side of the relationship, you know, when you're talking about me, I want to talk about it because I want to talk right now. This doesn't feel good for me. I want to fix mm-hmm. this. It's like you lose perspective of the other person in this relationship. I think that's where, again, like your lizard is driving too much, is when you get into that mm-hmm. headspace of, it needs to be about you. Like, this isn't comfortable for me, and I want to talk about it right now. And that's kind of one of those dangerous right. pitfalls. Like, that's another reason why it makes this so difficult, is because you do have to step back and, like, take a look at your needs, but then realize, like, is your lizard getting a little bit desperate and trying to fix this? And why are you trying to fix it so much? And really, in that case, it's like, you're forgetting about the other person and what they may be going through and what pain they might be having. And anyway,
that's... Right. Which is why I've identified that if I were to open that conversation with them right now, that's what it would be. Like, it would straight up be, I'd be like, okay, lizard, take the wheel. And, you know, if you're entering a reparative conversation, deciding that it is a reparative conversation, you've already kind of lost
mm-hmm.
because you're attached to that outcome. You know, like, I've come here to do this, therefore it will only be counted as success if this happens.
Right.
Which, again, we've established you're only in charge of 50% of that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that's part of the reason that the other part is I'm respecting a boundary of just, I need space. Right.
Yeah.
That's a really important part of
right.
it. But yeah, as long as when I think about breaking that silence, if it feels in my body like it's coming from those places, then I know that it's not time yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not time. And in my opinion, this needs to be, if I'm going to be the one to initiate, it needs to be a soul mind thing, which is just, I mean, that's how the other conversation went. The one that like it broke and then it resolved in a day. Mm-hmm. I legit just said, hey, here's the thing. I don't want to harp on it, but I'm sorry. I owned it. And then they began to share more of their experience and just kind of like tell me how it was for them. Mm-hmm. And I just listened. And then there was more experience sharing and there was more ownage. And then at the end of it, there was like, okay, so what do we do now? You know? And we both were ready to get to the next thing and we both got there. Mm-hmm. But I didn't go into it expecting to repair something.
Right.
I just went into it expecting to own my stuff and to listen.
Well, that's...
And the second I owned, I had an opportunity to listen, and then it just went where it went naturally.
Well, I love that, because then what you're saying is you went in with what you could control, which is your side of the conversation that you were going to own it, but then that established a level of trust for the other person to be able to be vulnerable, to share more, and then, you know, because of you wanting to show up with love and light, you listened to that information, and so there was this continual... like trust building there. And this is fantastic to hear. I love that. Cause that's how a relationship should work. And if there's a missing piece where there's not trust established or there's still fear in telling the other person, then there's something greater that's happening, something deeper that's, dysfunctional. And so, you've just like, you've modeled, like it's hard. You've modeled vulnerability and courage at the same time, both of you. I think that's really cool.
I'm really grateful to have that friendship. And then and on the other side of that coin, I think I've already said that phrase. I need to scratch that off my phrases to use once on the podcast list. On the other side of that coin is I'm not yet at a point where I'm able to model that in this other friendship. Like if we were to have that conversation today, I don't think I'm in a place where I could bring that to it, because I'm still allowing myself to like be hurt. And so then there's like, oh, there's another thing I got to like work through, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, I drive my kid to daycare. I drive back home in the car alone. And what do I do at that time? The same thing anybody would do. I rehearse the conversation in my head. Right.
Yeah.
And I listen to what comes up, and a lot of it is still, proof points about why they're making this a bigger deal than they should. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a huge fucking red flag that I'm sure as hell not just going to open with. You know? And so I give that expression and I let it work itself out and I have that conversation between me and me, and then I ask, okay, so why do you feel the need to express this? Where is that coming from? Are you defending yourself? Because this is really defensive language. What are you defending yourself against? Are you being attacked? Why do you feel attacked when you're not being attacked? On and on and on and on it goes, right? Mm-hmm. So I have the imaginary conversation with a friend, and then I debrief that conversation with myself and investigate where it's coming from. And for me, that's the act of just like teasing through and sifting through all of the stuff I need to sift through to get to the stuff underneath, and then that stuff for me to deal with myself. And then once I deal with those things, you're calling me. Hello.
Hello.
I'm not going to edit that out. This is very raw. What's the last thing you heard?
That you have this ongoing conversation with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's all me digging through all the stuff I need to do before I can get to a place where I can have another model conversation with this other person.
You do bring up an interesting point, though, is that everything that we talk about is definitely not one size fits all. There's different levels of intimacy. There's different levels of commitment in your different relationships, you know? So there's different levels of trust. So it's interesting, you know, you're talking about two relationships that, one you were willing and able to kind of find that repair within a day. And then this other one, not, because the experience might be different. The relationship might be different. So it literally, like, I would love to say it's a one size fits all. If you just practice this, it will fix all your relationships, but that's also not what we're saying. That's why it's practice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can simultaneously be kind of knocking one relationship out of the park. We'll see. There goes my ego telling me that I'm a rock star in that relationship again. God damn it. I was going to say you could simultaneously be knocking one relationship out of the park and then kind of like still really, really stumbling through another one at the same time. And that's also okay. Yes. Like you
Yes.
I don't. This is about to get really linguistically messy, but I have a friend who has three children, and he has said they're in high school. One of them's in college, and he told me the other day. He said, "I'm actually not a parent of three people. I am three completely different parents."
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And so, in the same way, I'm not a person who has all these friends. I am that many different friends. Like, I'm a different. There's a different me that I have to mm-hmm. be in order to relate to that person based on the terms of who we are and how we want to connect, yep. right? And so if I try to make it all centralized, then I'm going to make some blanket story about myself about I'm either good at relationships or I'm not good at relationships or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And there are some trends that you're going to see, like certain things that are going to pop up in all the relationships you have because you're the common denominator. But you, like you said, my relationship with person A is a very different relationship with different ingredients, mm-hmm. a different flavor profile, different intentions, different relational capacity, a different story, and then my relationship with the person mm-hmm. B, which is all those things make it a lot easier for me to get where I need to get in order to thrive as a contributor to that relationship. Whereas in person B, there are a different collection of elements, which is why I'm taking a lot longer. It's taking me a lot longer to get through all the stuff I need to get through. And that's okay. It is mm-hmm. okay. I am neither good at relationships nor bad at relationships. I am good at some. I am less good at others. And I'm growing, you know, like, I am simultaneously at all points in the spectrum. Mm-hmm.
I think it's also fair to say that going through this process does help you identify who's worth, I don't want to say worth, who you want to allow within your tribe, within your inner circle, and who may not have your highest good in mind. You know, we've talked a lot about toxic relationships, people that don't really serve us, when to let go. And this process, I think, like, if you're doing this and you're struggling to come to the repair piece and you're struggling to even have the conversation, I think that is certainly an opportunity to take a look at whether or not this relationship is in line with your true north self. And if not, yeah. you know, we've talked about having to shed before, like change is a shedding process. It's sometimes losing things, and sometimes that means losing relationships, which can be really difficult to go through in the beginning, but may be the very best thing for us in the end too.
Yeah, and the thing that sucks is you normally only see that it was better for you in retrospect. Yes,
absolutely.
You know, it's never. I don't want to say never, but I can't imagine it ever being easy to just surrender to that mm-hmm. level, to just like, this is something I care about, this is something I love, but if this is the end of it, then it's mm-hmm. the end of it, and not trying to control it just so that you can keep having something that you like.
Exactly. You right know? Right.
And the other thing is, like, right now it's a gift. I'm at least, and this is where I've learned how to be a little bit more of a gratitude warrior from you, is that the work that I'm doing, the digging that I'm doing, the conversations I'm having with myself, the stuff that I'm uprooting and dealing with, that's all prompted by this little blip on the radar with this friendship. That work is bigger than this friendship. Because mm-hmm. that work is me.
Yes.
Right? And so
yes.
that work improves my ability to show up in all of my relationships, including my relationship with myself. It's work I've needed to do anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is a prompting to just go fucking do mm-hmm. it. And so it's almost like the way to detach from an outcome is to understand that the work needs to be done because the work needs to be done. It's not that I need to make all these internal shifts so that I can then go repair that relationship. Mm-hmm. Because then, if it doesn't repair, I'm going to think all that work was for naught, and I'm probably going to undo it all in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Right? That's how many times you see people in a relationship. They think they know what they need to do to fix it. They do the thing. It doesn't get quote-unquote fixed, and then the thing undoes itself. Yeah. You know? That's why, because you're still motivated by some outcome. Whereas if you take the approach of, hey, this is work that I needed to do all along, and here's a golden opportunity where the universe took my head and pointed my face in the direction of that work and said, do it. Mm-hmm. Because now something you care about is on the line. You do the work. That doesn't mean that you're doing it to keep the thing you care about, but you're doing the work to do the work. And when you focus on that, usually the type of work you do yields you moving closer to a place where surrender comes a little bit easier in the event that you do lose the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so it all ends up being in the highest good of you and the other person, however that works out, if you focus on doing the work for the sake of doing the work.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, go back to what Glennon Doyle says, don't disappoint everybody else before you disappoint yourself. And so doing that work, yeah, you have to kind of go in with that mindset. I'm doing this for me. This work is for me, which ultimately, yes, will affect all of your relationships for the better. Even though this one event, this one relationship might have sparked the work. What a blessing. What a blessing.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's a gift if you make it. A punishment. What one person sees as a punishment, another person can see as a gift. It's all a matter of choice.
Yeah. Perspective is really huge. I was having a conversation with a friend this morning just about some changes, go figure, that are taking place in their workplace. And, you know, it's interesting where you can look at the same situation, the same event is happening. We can attach meaning to it and say it's going to, you know, suck and it's not fair and all this. But then if you change your perspective, just literally just changing your perspective to the other side. And it's amazing kind of what that does for your growth, how things change immediately. But yeah, it's all about realizing, yeah, there's still some work to do.
Absolutely. We could riff on this. You just dug up more things that I want to say, but I know you got to go in like 4 minutes. So what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for you being mindful of the time because I'm just talking.
I know. Like this feels like back when we were in the coffee shop. Like I feel like we could just go on this topic for another couple of hours.
It's so rich. I have more things to say. What am I grateful for today? I'm gonna shift this. This one's going to be really hard to do. I don't typically have a gratitude for myself, especially because this is where it can get very confusing, where it may sound egotistical, right? And I don't ever want to show up that way. And so I'm just prefacing this with, we all need to practice having gratitude for ourselves and our strengths. And so I felt it was important for me to share that today, that this one is about myself. I've had a long 2 weeks of some really intense family, starting with the weekend, you know, where I was attaching the outcome and thought I was going to do better than I did. And then I rolled into some other family that came this past weekend, and then rolling into my father-in-law being, he had surgery and he's been at my house for a recovery. And I am just, I'm the person that can handle all that. I'm, you know, especially with medical stuff. Like I think I should have been a nurse or a doctor. How did I get knife out of that? Wow.
Damn you, autocorrect. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. My mind autocorrected.
A knife.
Should have been a knife in my other life. That's what I was going to say. That's why I said knife. I was going to, anyway, I digress.
That's going to be our second t-shirt.
Yeah. and I can handle that. And people just kind of, expect me to show up that way in my life. And I'm just grateful that I have that calm. I have that level-headedness just to sort of take all this and be able to get through it. I feel like I'm the person that can handle crises very well. So I'm just grateful that wherever, yes, that came from, I'm happy to have it because it does serve my family in many ways. So there you go.
This may be the first time I think you've shown, like, you've been your own gratitude, but that's refreshing. I like that. And yes, I have experienced firsthand how very cool and collected you are in times of crisis. It's kind of unreal.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
What?
I was going to say, how about you? What are you grateful for?
I actually am grateful. This is going to sound, I'm not going to disclaim it. I am grateful for the two friends that I spent this entire fucking episode talking about. Yeah. It just, for all the reasons people probably can tell by now after getting to this point in the podcast, I'm just And it's not even a, like a thing where a few months ago I told you I was like weaponizing gratitude as a way to combat feeling like a victim. And like, it's not that. I do, like, I genuinely am grateful for these two people. I was grateful for them before these ruptures, before the repair, in the middle of it. There's always been gratitude for these two people. So yeah, I'll just leave it right there. I'm just really grateful for both of them.
I think it's really important to point out too, like, these are the kind of people that I would want to be friends with, because if you can go through these difficult times and they're still there as friends and they still mean a lot to you and you mean something to them, like, that's that, those are good humans. Those are good friends. So yeah.
They are both amazing humans.
Very cool.
Well, until next time, everyone, thank you for loving me. Thank you for being there.
Bye. We are grateful for you. Thank you for listening. And if you like what we're doing and you want more, then you can join our tribe to interact with other like-minded individuals. You can go through our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/TrueNorthPodcast11.
Is it Podcast 11 or is it True North 11?
Oh, shit.
It's in our show notes. If you want more than that... You want some more hands-on healing stuff that we do? I do actual energy healing and body work, and Abby does life coaching and workshops. You can find the URLs in our show notes when we figure out what they are.
Mm-hmm. And we are always trying to increase our reach and bring more people to find their true north. So we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and rate it in whatever podcast platform you use.
Done. That's perfect. That
was
perfect.
What about the gratitude?
Oh, hang on. And one last thing. What are you grateful for? There. I said it. I said the thing.